is the LA Local Morning Update, keeping you caught up with the latest from KNX News. Check back this afternoon for the LA Local's full daily briefing on what you need to know in SoCal.
Somebody out there won the lottery and has just 2 days to claim it. We got another case of somebody going to get their really expensive Apple stuff at the store, only to find out it was picked up already by somebody posing as them. But first, the latest on the killing of the healthcare CEO and what was written on the shell casings.
Deny, defend, depose. Those were the words on the bullet casings used to assassinate the CEO of United Health in New York.
There was a message. Somebody did that with the intent for the investigators to share that. So those words resonate with this horrible incident.
Those words, deny, defend, and depose, likely in reference to how insurance companies reject claims. Rodney Harrison there used to work at the NYPD, now a law enforcement analyst for CBS News, and he says this guy appears skilled and the crime well-planned.
The gun jams. He's able to deal with the malfunction very quickly, so it looks like he's very proficient with how to use a firearm. And then he gets on a bike and rides off knowing that there's cameras all over the place and aggresses into Central Park, knowing that he could possibly change there and then walk out of Central Park without being observed on video.
Yeah, but sources say he was observed on video, and at least one camera from a Starbucks shows enough of his face that cops should be able to use facial recognition technology. So cops are slowly but surely closing in on this guy. It's day two. United Health has been widely and loudly criticized, for not only by patients, but by some lawmakers as well.
When you put the words together that were on the shell casings, TMZ and others are pointing out that when you Google that, it points you to a book. The subtitle is Why Insurance Companies Don't Pay Claims and What She Can Do About It. And the title of the book is actually those three words. A little more on the investigation. Past the photo, the one usable one, there's also a water bottle on the phone left the scene. So they're hoping that belonged to the shooter. And CNN says they've also searched a hostel in Upper Manhattan where the gunman might have been staying. They went through there. And then other CEOs are upping their security because, again, Brian Thompson was alone despite threats that had been made against him. And because online right now, some of what you can see, people posting pictures of some of the other healthcare CEOs and talking about this shooter as some sort of modern-day Robin Hood.
That's New York. In California, two kindergartners are in critical condition in the hospital. They were shot at a little school up in NorCal, Seventh-day Adventist Private School. The sheriff says the gunman killed himself after a meeting at the school in the small town about 30 miles south of Chico.
Our preliminary investigation indicates that this individual came on to campus to meet with the principal to discuss the possibility of enrolling a student.
There was a girl, a sixth grader there. She told CBS Sacramento that she tried to comfort those younger kids.
We were all scared, obviously, but we tried holding it in. I told the little graders to close their eyes and cover their ears because he was pacing back and forth from the window because we saw a shadow.
Hard to listen to. The school, as we said, very small. About 35 kids go there. It's a K through 8th grade. Investigators say the gunman took an Uber there, may have targeted, but because of a religious affiliation. Deputies say they are interviewing that Uber driver.
Thief has walked away from the Apple store in Glendale with a MacBook, pretending to be the person who ordered it. We've seen this before, and it happened again. Kyle Bales ordered the computer online, went to pick it up, and this was at the Americana, but he was told, no, somebody already got it. You already came in. You got to go file a police report. You talked to KCAL News.
And I bought a couple products from Apple with the in-store pickup, and it's just kind of like feels more secure. But it wasn't this time.
Patrick Haar is a security expert.
They've gone to the dark web, sourced a user ID, a driver's license. They take that to the Apple store. They present the ID, they present the QR code, and they take the laptop.
Same thing happened earlier this week, Apple store at the Glendale Galleria.
Well, check under your car seat, check the trunk, dig deep into the bottom of your purse. There is an unclaimed Mega Millions ticket worth more than $197 million, which is going to expire if the owner doesn't come forward by Saturday. John Baird, live with the details.
Oh, this is a golden ticket, that Mega Millions ticket with life-changing money attached, and no one has stepped forward yet. There were actually two winning tickets sold in that drawing, both at the same place at the Chevron station in Encino, and they were the only winning tickets in the entire country. What are the odds of that? Don't bet money on it. Now, whether someone has lost the ticket or has a pile of them they never bothered to go through, who knows? But the clock is ticking on that ticket. And by Saturday, it'll just be another orange piece of paper. Lottery tickets expire after a certain amount of time. So especially people who buy their tickets at that station on a regular basis, it might be a good time to tear the house apart tonight and make sure that somewhere in all that clutter, you're not holding a $197 million ticket. But Mike and Vicky, if you remember, there was a case in the Bay Area a few years ago where a delivery driver won something like $300 million, and for months no one came forward. And then one day, and this is what he said afterwards, he was at home scanning his tickets. You can do that with your smartphone. And he discovered that he had won $300 million, so he decided to call his boss and tell him he wasn't coming into work the next day.
If I had ever been to that Chevron, like even just once, I'd be checking everywhere, just in case. And homelessness in Southern California, the changes we've seen recently after the Supreme Court ruling on clearing encampments. Newport Beach, one of the cities in Orange County that have been a bunch of them that have passed the anti-camping laws since then. Latest count shows just 11 people living on the streets or in cars, down from 70 last year. The mayor of Newport Beach is Will O'Neill.
Mayor, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
So I have to say, when I think of Newport Beach, the first thing that comes into my mind is not exactly your homeless crisis. And going from 70 to 11 may not seem like that much to people in Los Angeles, where, what do we have, 45,000 or so? So help us understand why this is significant.
Yeah, when you're a coastal town in particular, you're always going to have folks who are homeless. And homelessness doesn't stop at borders. So when we're talking about Los Angeles, Orange County, any of the cities on the coast, I can guarantee you, if you talk to the mayors in Los Angeles, in the beach communities, they'd tell you they would love to be able to be in our position. And they can be. This is one of those topics now, thanks to the U.S. Supreme Court ruling that reversed a Ninth Circuit decision, which is the appellate court here in California and on the West Coast, saying that cities couldn't enforce their anti-camping ordinance unless they had a place to put someone that night. The court has reversed that, and cities like ours, who still have a homeless shelter, we still put people up in beds if they want them. But there is no compassion leaving someone on the streets, and so we enacted a more aggressive anti-camping ordinance, like you said, like a lot of other cities, and we've put that into play, and we've seen it decrease from 70 people to 11, and that is a major progress that I think a lot of other cities can model.
So here's the question people have been concerned about before: you didn't just clear people out and move them down the road, right? Did you help people, or did you just say, you can't be here, go to the next town, keep going?
No, we always have a handout, right? Like, we always want to pick people up and bring them off the street, put them into shelter, get them out into social services. We've been investing in that for years. And that hasn't stopped just because the Supreme Court allows us to enforce the anti-camping ordinance. But if people are going to continue repeatedly to refuse service, there is no reason for them to be able to sleep in public spaces, you know, at the pier, in parks. You know, you talk to a lot of parents. They see people sleeping at the parks where their kids play, and it feels unsafe. You run across a lot of folks who, when you see these encampments, you talk to the public service, the public officials that have to clear them out. The number of needles that they clear out is unbelievable. And if you talk to LA Fire, they'll tell you a lot of their fires that they respond to are started in encampments. So there is a public safety component to this, of course. But at the end of the day, no, we're not just arresting. That's not our first step. Our first step is trying to get people up and off the streets because, again, there's no compassion leaving someone there. But if they're going to refuse it, then our police have to come in, and that's our last option.
We are speaking with the mayor of Newport Beach, Will O'Neill. You mentioned earlier borders and what does or does not stop at the borders. And you also used the word compassion. I'm curious. So Los Angeles, one of the big stories here is that the city is on its way to becoming an official sanctuary city. It is in response to Donald Trump winning the White House. Is becoming a sanctuary city something that Newport Beach would consider?
We would do the opposite. We, in fact, have opposed the sanctuary state policy here in California, not because we lack the compassion for folks who, you know, are here and productive members of society. We're more concerned with people who are coming in who commit crimes here, who have committed crimes in their country of origin. Just recently in Newport Beach, the U.S. Coast Guard, a branch of our military that is based actually in our harbor, stopped a boat of 21 migrants coming in illegally, and two of the people on there were from Uzbekistan and one was from Russia. When you have a system that is encouraging people to illegally immigrate on a boat into Orange County from Uzbekistan, you have a broken system. And so I'm not exactly sure why the city of Los Angeles feels the need to be so extreme on this issue that they would actually encourage and protect people committing crimes against other people, perhaps themselves being illegal immigrants who are victims.
Newport Beach Mayor Will O'Neill. Mayor, thanks.
Cruise to Mexico is getting more expensive. We'll tell you why. That and more as 20 minutes of nonstop news continues.
Don't get scammed out there when you're buying all those gifts online. IRS has some warnings.
As part of National Tax Security Awareness Week, IRS spokesman Rafael Tolino says be especially careful if you get emails or texts on your phone advising you of a delivery of one kind or another that you need to confirm.
You might see some scams out there that might be a smishing, which are texts or emails, phishing that claim to be from delivery companies where you have this delivery, click on this link, provide us information. All kinds of nuanced scams and schemes out there that seem to be a little more in the limelight this kind of year.
When using your phone to shop, think twice about doing it in public.
If you're out and about using Wi-Fi, you don't want to do any transactions on that. Get a VPN. Be smart about that.
Tolino says when it comes to giving out personal information online, the key is to release as little as possible. And if it seems like a string of personal information is being asked for, that's a sign to back off and cancel what you're doing rather than leave yourself wide open to identity theft or tax fraud problems. I'm Pete Demetrio, KNX News 97.1 FM.
A Los Angeles Superior Court judge has ruled that a pit bull Labrador mix will not be euthanized despite biting a woman in Burbank. Natalie Tavidian has reaction from an activist who's been fighting for the dog's life.
The dog named Conan will be returned to its owners, but they're ordered to follow strict rules like keeping him in a secure space, placing a muzzle when out of the home.
I felt like I took my first breath in weeks. I couldn't breathe until I knew that he was safe.
Shira Scott Astroff is the founder of the Animal Rescue Mission. She's gotten to know the dog and its owners, who claim the dog was provoked repeatedly before the bite.
Traumatizing. This has been, it's the worst thing for a parent to go through. And anybody with a pet knows that these animals, they are our children. They are our world. You know, I live for my animals.
The court's ruling says Conan is vicious, but also says he doesn't create a threat to public health, and that's why he won't be euthanized. I'm Natalie Tavidian, KNX News 97.1 FM.
Yeah, so a cruise to Mexico is getting more expensive.
Mexico's Senate has voted to charge cruise ship passengers $42 per head for port calls. It's already passed in Mexico's lower house, meaning it will take effect next year. Mexico's Caribbean coast is home to Cozumel, the busiest port of call for cruise ships in the world, with 4 million cruise passengers a year. The National Confederation of Commerce, Service, and Tourism Chambers said the $42 charge could make other countries' Caribbean ports more competitive than Mexico's. The fear is this could result in a significant decrease in visitors to Mexico. Two-thirds of the money raised would go to the Mexican Army, not to improve port facilities. Mexico's ruling party is already running enormous budget deficits to fund its favorite building projects, like railways and oil refineries, some of which are being built by the Army. I'm Ed Donahue.
So Pete Hegseth is still working it, trying to get that gig as defense secretary, but the Trump transition team has been told it doesn't look good that he might be confirmed, and so they're, floating the name of Ron DeSantis, the governor of Florida. And we talked about that and more with the Hills reporter this morning, Brett Samuels.
For the time being that Pete Hegseth is digging in, he's not going anywhere himself, As you guys mentioned, Trump has essentially floated Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, and his one-time very fierce rival as a potential replacement for Hegseth if Hegseth does end up withdrawing. And, one of the issues for Hegseth is even though he is publicly digging in, he's saying he's not going anywhere, he's readying for a fight. The problem for him is, once Trump starts thinking about and talking about alternatives, it can be hard to undo that idea or get that idea out of his head.
Yeah, does he end up unpicking him and making the call himself, or does he get to the point like, last time where it becomes clear that the votes aren't there anymore in the Senate, so you got to go?
Yeah, I think it's mostly the latter, as Trump Trump has not publicly signaled that he's out on Pete Hegseth, and from what I've heard from folks, Trump isn't going to, pull the rug out from under him today or imminently necessarily. But I think that is the question, is if it becomes clear even behind the scenes that Hegseth doesn't have the support among Republicans to get confirmed, and then it's just going to be this sort of losing battle regardless, then that's when Trump maybe will step in and replace him. And of course, you know, Republicans have 53 seats in the Senate, so he can only afford to lose support of three senators before his nomination is imperiled. So, you know, we're closely watching to see kind of the tea leaves of how some of these senators are reacting to this nomination.
I want to ask you about this interview with Donald Trump tomorrow, first since winning the election. What would you like to hear from him? What would you ask him? And what do you think will actually come out of this interview?
Yeah, it'll be interesting because, as you guys said, you know, this is his first interview that he's doing since winning the election. It's kind of interesting. He's sort of been, for a guy who loves to talk to the press, seemingly, you know, he has been pretty closed off since winning the election. We haven't seen much of him. But, you know, I'd certainly be interested in hearing more about, you know, these tariff threats that he's making against Canada and Mexico, how serious he is about these. Obviously, those are two very close allies that would really roil the economy both here and abroad. I'd be curious about hearing you know, his plans for this mass deportation that he's promised to sort of start on day one. You know, I think it would be interesting to hear someone drill down on sort of what the practical consequences of that would be. Obviously, we've heard from folks that, you know, if you just suddenly deport, you know, millions of people, what does that do for the economy, for labor and job shortages? So, you know, be curious to hear about that. And then, of course, foreign policy would be curious to hear more about how he's approaching the war in Ukraine, how he's approaching the situation in Israel and Gaza. You know, he spoke about these things on a campaign trail, but rarely did we hear him sort of drill down on the specifics and the sort of practical consequences of what some of his proposals would be.
That is The Hill's reporter, Brett Samuels.